Hello, everybody. Welcome to V Speaks Conversations with Heart and Soul. I'm your host, Lisa Burwell, and I'm thrilled to bring you an interview with my next guest, Megan Ryan Asbury. She is an author of a new Christian inspirational book that debuts this fall. I had the great privilege and pleasure of getting an advance copy and reading this. Megan also happens to be our cover girl of her wedding that was held in early January at Eden State Park. And she is also my beautiful niece. Megan, welcome to the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here. What an introduction. I get to be an author and a bride and a niece.
So many things. You're living your best life, right?
Yeah.
Totally best life. And you just came back from Paris, what, 5 weeks ago? Something like
yes.
that?
Yes. It was about a month ago, and it was just as magical as it looks.
Yes, isn't it, though? The city of light, the city of romance, for sure. I love yes. Paris, and I'm so glad that you got to go for your second honeymoon, right? Because your first honeymoon.
Yes, our second honeymoon. Yeah. Unplanned, but worked out.
Oh, that's all good. You can have a third one, too, you know?
Yeah, we'll just keep honeymooning forever. I like that idea.
Yes. So the name of your book is You Are Not Behind Building a Life Without Having Everything You Want. Beautiful name of a book that you named yourself. And that,
So, yes, I came up with the idea for the title before I started writing the book, and ran it by a few friends who I trust, who I know what a good title is, and everyone seemed to like it. And then my publisher liked it, and we just kept rolling with it.
Well, that's amazing. And your publisher is Harvest House Publications. And
yes.
How did you connect with them?
So I used to work for a ministry called Proverbs 31, and our president, Lisa Turkhurst, is a best-selling author and is just widely known in this space as a great communicator and just a great leader. And she, while she was up and coming and trying to become an author, she made a promise to God that if she ever was able to find success in this industry, that she would help train other women who longed to have the same dream. Mm-hmm. And through that, she started a conference called She Speaks, where aspiring authors and communicators can come and get lots of hands-on training for about 2.5 days. And you have the opportunity to meet with a publisher and pitch your book idea. And one of the things about the publishing industry is if you don't have an agent, or even if you do, it's hard to get face-to-face with publishers just on your own, especially if you don't have like a large following on social media or something like that. And I had been working there a little over 2 years at that point and knew that I wanted to pursue writing. And I got the opportunity to meet with one of those publishing guests at She Speaks. I met with a few of them and conversations continued, and Harvest House was the best fit just for the message that I was working on. And so they were really, really awesome to work with.
Wow. What a great connection. So many connections dovetailing together for you to mm-hmm. one work there. And that's very commendable of Lisa to perpetuate and grow and mentor people underneath her, because I think that's what we're all supposed to be doing, you know, multiplying and
yes.
multiplying opportunities and people and looking out for those coming up, you know, behind us, and hopefully someone that's ahead of us is going to lend a helping hand too. It doesn't happen as often as it probably should. So you were pretty blessed to be able to have such a good connection too, but also you are writing about in an industry or in a genre that is becoming more and more popular than it may have been in years past, because so many people need to find their way, their compass. You know, we all need, you know, a lamppost and signs about where we're going. And you and your training for these many years, and you've put a lot of time and soul searching into your faith and your walk with God. And it shows, because you've been very diligent about it and have a lot of passion, and you took it very seriously. You know, sometimes I think that's all you need to do sometimes is take something seriously. You might not even be the absolute most talented person in the world, but you might be just about the only one that's going to take something seriously and to like till the land and grow yourself. And it's really, really important. And that's one of the many great attributes that I have always seen in you, Megan. You know, you really did and do put your hand to the plow, and it's a beautiful thing to watch. And you're a young published author right now and newly married. And do you remember, was it 5 years ago that you and I took a crazy like 32-hour jaunt to New York City? How long ago was that? 5 years ago or something like that?
Yeah, just about.
Okay.
2019.
And we went to see Tina Brown and Oprah Winfrey and several other women of influence to cover it for the magazine with Tina Brown's Woman in the World. And it was a wild 36 hours or something like that that we did. And I so
usually is.
And it usually is. And I so appreciate that, you know, you were there with me as my wingman and it was fun. But we had a lot of good conversations there because it was just you and I, and we were weirdly, even though our ages are vastly apart, in a weird, similar place at the same time where we were waiting for something to happen, you know, in each of our lives respectively. So, this is even for me right now, and I'm on the other end of, you know, the soul searching walk and all that, but you are not behind. It's not just for the youth, which very much seems like they may be behind, because I think so many other demographics and older people also feel the exact same way, because there's disappointment or things didn't turn out like you thought they were going to turn out. What are the key takeaways, and I know you can't summarize your entire book in a couple of takeaways, but there's got to be an ethos to the book of why you were so impressed to write about this specific topic that a lot of people go through, but very few people will talk about it for whatever reason. I don't know. I think they're just waiting for like the next day something to happen, and then the next day it doesn't happen. So, what say you?
Yeah, I think, just like you said, this isn't necessarily written for a particular demographic of age. I do think people who are around my age and younger will naturally gravitate towards it. But one thing I realized in feeling like you're behind in life is that even when you finally get to the thing that makes you feel like you're behind, there will inevitably be another thing that makes you feel behind. The line always moves. And so a personal example of this recently is, you know, I got married in my 30s, which in some parts of the country is very young to get married. If you lived in New York City or out West, like people getting married at 31, that's like, why are you getting married so young? That's wasting your youth. Like, you got so much time. But then I grew up in the South, and in the South, that is ancient to get married. Like, everyone I know is pretty much married at this point. And I was down to being the last single friend in a lot of my circles. Mm-hmm. And I finally get married, you know, this thing that I wanted for so long. And then everybody we know had a baby. Mm-hmm. And we're not trying to have a baby right now, but it was like, okay, we finally get to be in this, you know, club of arriving. Like, we're not single anymore and we're married. And then everyone we know has like seemingly moved on to the next phase of having a kid. And then we're still left out and feeling like, okay, like, are we behind? Because we don't have kids yet. And that's just a small example of how the line continuously moves, no matter what you're kind of aiming for, with that one thing that's making you feel like you're behind. And a lot of what I wrote was my experience in my mid to late 20s and getting ready to turn 30, and just kind of feeling like that decade in particular, you really start to see the gaps in like what people are doing. You know, until you're graduated from college, most of us are doing the same things and like on the same track and on the same team. And then all of a sudden everyone graduates from college and goes wildly different directions and are doing completely different things with their life. And it's really easy to start to, especially with social media, stack yourself up against other people and say like, well, they're here and I feel so far away from that, so I must be behind. And then we're reconciling with the expectations we had of who we would be at a particular point in life, you know, thinking like, wow, by this age or by this point in my career, I really thought I would be here and I'm not. Like, what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. And regardless of, again, like if you're in your 20s or in your 30s or even beyond, there's always something that is making you look back and think, okay, like, did I miss something? Like, am I where I am because of something I chose or something I did? It's like looking at your life through a screen and going, man, like my life does just not look as cool as everyone else's. And then looking ahead to the future of everyone seems to be going the direction and I don't have the map to get to where I want to go. Mm-hmm. And that is way more common than I do think people talk about. And maybe they don't put the language of that makes me feel like I'm behind. But I think so often people can feel like they are behind or life has passed them by. And there's a space where you have to kind of acknowledge where that feeling is coming from in order to walk forward and not feel that way anymore. And so a few of the things I talk about in the book are kind of looking back part of there are a few things we have to like address. One of them being, I think a lot of people carry a lot of unnecessary shame and guilt from their past and kind of think, man, like if I hadn't made this decision or I hadn't done this like thing that I'm ashamed of, like maybe I would have gotten what I wanted in life. Mm-hmm. And while yes, our decisions have consequences, God is bigger than our mistakes. And he's like not one that heaps shame on us. And so we don't have to live in that place of shame and blame ourselves for not being where we want to be in life. And then something I really don't think we talk about is the grief that comes with the fact that our lives are not what we hoped they would turn out to be. And, you know, grief is something that people can easily, you know, step into if it's the death of someone they know or some extreme like traumatic event. But I don't think we talk about the little grief that comes with like, hey, at this point, this is where I thought I would be. And that's not it. And I am disappointed. And there's a grief with disappointment that we have to address. And then with that acknowledging, like we have to be honest with ourselves about what we want. Right. And I think so often, especially in Christian circles, we try to kind of like manipulate this idea of contentment. It's like, I'm totally happy where I am, then I'll finally get the thing I want. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that's not how it works. Like we have desires in us and mm-hmm. a lot of those desires are for good things. Mm-hmm. And so I think once we address those few things, we can then start to like put some practical handles on how do we actually live our lives, not feeling like we're constantly behind and trying to catch up with other people.
So two questions. And excellently, beautifully said. One, how do you deal? What are the coping mechanisms to deal with the grief that is spawned predominantly from, you know, disappointment? And the second, you know, I mean, well, I'll just give you that one now. So
I think there are unhealthy ways to cope. And a lot of them look like trying to numb out and
trying to what?
Whatever that looks like to you. So mm-hmm. for some people, it's just living their life scrolling through their phone mm-hmm. and they don't want to face what's right in front of them mm-hmm. and they don't want to feel the grief. Mm-hmm. So they just numb out scrolling. For some people, it's, you know, substance abuse, like whether that's like functional alcoholism or drug addictions. I mean, I did a lot of research about what COVID did to our, like mm-hmm. those rates of how much time people were spending on their phone mm-hmm. or the amount of alcohol beverages people were consuming per week, and everything skyrocketed during COVID because suddenly we didn't have all these things that we could distract mm-hmm. ourselves with mm-hmm. from that like kind of ache that we feel. And so mm-hmm. those are some like unhealthy ways that people cope. And those are big ones, but then there are smaller ones like constantly having to put something on the calendar to look forward to. And we're overspending on trips we can't afford or clothes we want to have to make our lives feel and look full mm-hmm. of things that aren't actually going to satisfy us mm-hmm. at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And so I think some ways to kind of combat those things are to like get in really good community with other people who are going to encourage you. And I talk a lot about our expectations of what we want our community to look like and what the reality of the community needs that we have are, and how we don't need to just be friends with people who are in the exact same stage of life as us. Like, well, there's beauty in diversity mm-hmm. of friendship and so much that we can learn in that. Mm-hmm. It's really getting good at celebrating and practicing gratitude. I think we make a big deal out of things that we would constitute as massive milestones like weddings or babies or job promotions. Mm-hmm. And when you're in a spot where you're not getting those things, it can kind of feel like you have nothing in life to celebrate. Mm-hmm. But the reality is there's so much mm-hmm. good mm-hmm. right in front of us that's mm-hmm. worth celebrating. And so I'm all for making the smallest things a big deal mm-hmm. and learning how to do that alongside other people. So those are just a few of the ways that I talk mm-hmm. about in the book, mm-hmm. kind of combating those unhealthy coping mechanisms mm-hmm. with things that are a little bit more healthy.
Yeah. So very true. For me, and I'm thinking that, you probably touch on this too. I mean, sometimes things don't happen, for a reason, for our good, just like it can, mm-hmm. you know, happen, you know, something we don't like, we're not necessarily in love with the idea of waiting a very long time for something to come to pass, but sometimes that's just our destiny. And mm-hmm. I don't know how my own coping mechanism, if that's what it's called, would be a lot of faith in God taking care of me on a daily basis mm-hmm. and my life, and that whatever I have or don't have is okay because I accept it. And I'm in a state mm-hmm. of gratitude, like a lot of the very little things and the beauty on a minute by minute basis, hearing a bird walking to the mailbox. I mean, like that could make me ridiculously happy. You know, very, very little things that are beautiful about life. But do you touch on that, like that we all do have a destiny and that we have to rest in the fact that sometimes things just don't come exactly the way we hoped or wanted, but mostly they do come.
Yeah. So there's a verse in Psalms that I go back to a lot. It's in Psalm 34. It starts in verse 6, I think, but it talks about, it says, "Taste and see that the Lord is good, and those who fear him lack nothing. The lions may grow weak and hungry, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing." And I think if we sit and we actually believe what the Bible says is true, that we can taste and see the Lord's goodness, mm-hmm. that if we fear him, we don't lack anything, that if we seek him, we don't lack a good thing, then we can trust that what is in front of us is not based on lack. And I think where we get tripped up mm-hmm. is we define good by what the people around us or by what the internet or by what society says is good. And mm-hmm. so we really have to go back to, what does scripture say is good? And there's a lot of things in scripture that I definitely wouldn't call good. One of them being suffering. The Bible says it's good to suffer and that we will suffer.
Right.
I don't think that's good. No. Like, I don't look at my life and go, yes, please, let me welcome all the suffering into my life. But if I trust that God is who he says he is mm-hmm. and that he keeps his promises, I can trust that in the midst of my suffering, there's still good to be found. And there he is still doing good and working good out behind the scenes. But I think it starts with, do we believe that
yes,
we
yes.
don't lack a good thing in Christ?
Right, right. Megan, how many people have had the privilege of getting to read the book before it actually is out and about, just like select media?
Yeah, they're starting to give it out to media outlets now. I've had one friend who read it in its entirety from start to finish. Like as I was writing it, I would send her chapters and get her feedback, and she was an all-star friend for doing that. Mm-hmm. And then I've had a couple of friends who've gotten to read pieces of it along the way, but I haven't given it to anyone to like read in its from start to finish format outside of my publishing team.
What is the response that you've had from the limited club of people that have had the chance to read it?
I think people are just encouraged that it's normal
yeah.
to feel this way. Like you're not the only one who mm-hmm. feels like you're behind in life mm-hmm. and that there is hope mm-hmm. that we don't have to live in this constant state of life isn't what I thought mm-hmm. it was going to be mm-hmm. and therefore it can't be good.
Right.
And I do think there's a level of we're always going to feel a little bit behind. And I get to that at the very end. It's like, I give you all the tools and the resources that you need to kind of like move forward. But then just to like give you this reminder of, hey, like we're going to feel behind because the world is broken and mm-hmm. we're going to like want things we don't have because we're sinful. And mm-hmm. that is normal and okay, because it's meant to point us to the fact that eternity with God is coming and it's going to be so much better than this.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So how difficult was it? You had so many things that you had been waiting for that I know about in your life a couple years ago, a desire to have a book published, in going to seek out what you did with the seminar about how to, you know, be published. And that was a desire of yours that was realized, and then a desire to meet your intended in your lovely Lucas. And you were in a waiting period, or like a seeming holding pattern. I don't think it was probably, for me looking into your life, as bad as you were feeling like the weight of the waiting. But how does it feel to you to see these things realized, to see God's faithfulness in your life, that these things that you were waiting for, two big ones, meeting Lucas and getting married, and also becoming a published author that you have wanted to be for a good 5 years or more? What does it feel like to have that?
I will be brutally honest here. Most days I like forget how badly I wanted this, because now I have it. And that's just kind of how the fickle state of the human heart is that we want things so badly, and then we finally get them, and it's really easy to take that for granted.
Yeah.
And again, I am in a very, I'm trying to be very diligent about being grateful for like what's right in front of me. And obviously the last year of my life has included a ton of transition. I wrote an entire book. I got engaged and planned a wedding, got married. I moved cities. I started a new job. Like everything about my life, you know, looks completely different than it does right now. And it would be so easy to like look back and be like, I want all the things I used to have, or to look ahead and be like, all right, let's move on to the next. We got here. Let's time to go on to the next thing. But really practicing like living in present gratitude for the fact that I prayed and waited for this part of my life for so long. And I don't want to rush past it. The same way that the things I want now and I'm waiting and praying for now, when those things finally come, I also don't want to rush past them.
Yes, I think that's so beautiful. Like really practice savoring the moments that of seeing realized destinies and through prayer and waiting, and then being so, so thankful for them. But I do agree with you that the second we get things, we literally can't even remember that we were waiting for them. And I have no idea why the human condition is like it is, but we must fight it because it's really, I guess maybe that's what that saying that everyone's been saying in my whole life that I really never understood exactly what it meant was fight the good fight of faith. I think maybe that might actually sum it up, because you're going to need it to continue to like be forever grateful, thankful and believing for good things that are coming our way, or even the day that we have today. It could be a lot worse, you know, like on bad days that I have, and they seem pretty bad. I like have to remind myself, I go, well, I know about five different things that could have gone a lot worse, and a life that I could have that could be so much worse right now. So I'm fine. And I am going to be fine, because, you know, you have to talk yourself off the ledge sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes you do have to do that. And it's, one of the most common commands that we are given in the Bible is to remember. And I think that's because we are very forgetful.
Oh, because we're forgetful. Yes. Okay. That is true. Very, very true. How do you like your church you're going to now in Nashville? Are you happy?
Oh, it's been wonderful. Yes. I go to Midtown Fellowship. There's several campuses in Nashville, but I go to the West Campus, which my husband was part of the group that helped plant that church, and he leads worship there. And we've got a really awesome community that we has made moving to Nashville a lot easier in terms of making friends, because it's just got some really great people.
That's so good. I'm so happy for you. I'd like to come visit sometime on a trip.
Yes, anytime you want.
Well, let's take a little segue here and remember, as you just pointed out, your fun wedding. It was so, so fun. I'm glad you got married for you, and I'm glad you got married for our family to have a real family reunion too, because that was pretty great.
Yes, so it great. Was Thank so you fun for to have everyone married. Together.
So that we could get together. It's great. So why don't, like, out of your, you talk about your own wedding, you know, the father of the bride cut line that we have on the cover is a nice cut line and it sounds good, but why don't you share like just how poignant and real that description is for you and what you wanted in your life and what ended up being your wedding?
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Santa Rosa Beach, so I couldn't imagine getting married anywhere else. But as anyone who's ever attempted to plan a wedding knows, that there's a lot of limits for a lot of different reasons on where you can get married. And a few of ours were like the size of people we wanted to invite and the time of year we wanted to do it and the expense of how much a wedding costs. So I really wanted to do the whole thing, like what ceremony and reception at Eden State Gardens. I said this, and I can't believe you didn't know this. I read your editor's note.
I didn't know that.
When you and Jerry got married, I was the flower girl. I was probably about four. Mm-hmm. And y'all got married in Carillon Beach and did the reception at Eden. Mm-hmm. And like that just felt like somewhere, I think that's like the first memory of a wedding that mm-hmm. I have mm-hmm. is y'all's wedding. And so it's always been somewhere I wanted to get married. And then I've, you know, had friends over the years who I've seen get married there, and it's just a very beautiful space. Mm-hmm. And there were just some restrictions on us being able to have the reception there. And so we had no idea what we were going to do. And I mean, my mom, I think, called every possible venue in town trying to figure out what we were going to do. And we talked about, should we not even get married at the beach? Should we not do the ceremony at Eden? Like, we just went around and around. And I sort of like jokingly threw out to my parents, like, what if we just did the reception in the backyard? And my parents wouldn't mind me saying this. My dad works in like construction, and the backyard has historically been like a junk site for all of his stuff. And there's been this master plan for as long as I can remember to redo the backyard, but it's just, you know, life gets busy and, you know, your space is always the last thing to get fixed. Mm-hmm. And then I think my dad was like, oh, that's like a lot. I don't really know about that. But my parents' house is just very, very special to me. My grandfather and my dad like built it with their bare two hands. It's the only house I know. We moved in when I was four. The entire neighborhood has changed. Like, none of the houses in the neighborhood are even the same as they used to be, but there's still sits there. And I just have a lot of really sweet memories from growing up there. And it's just a very special place to me, and it means a lot. And so I kind of pushed after the idea got thrown out, and we started to see, like, we asked a few vendors, like, what are the possibilities? Could we do it? And eventually convinced my dad to let us do it in the backyard. And it was a win for them too, because now they have a redone backyard that they won't have to redo again.
Right, you're so very nice. You probably made your mom, you know, in the waiting game, your mom was probably waiting for a really long time to have her backyard done, and
yes,
you were able to accommodate
that.
She
was definitely waiting a very long time. And we were engaged for 5 months, so they had 5 months to completely overhaul the backyard, and they didn't really start until like 2.5 months before, just getting some permits and their schedules. And it came together so like beautifully.
It was a feat.
It was really, really sweet to be able to get married back there.
Yes. I would drive by even only a month or 3 weeks before your wedding, and I would not understand how that was going to be ready for your wedding, but indeed it was, and it was so beautiful and so fun. And the band that Lucas loved and wanted was a home run, because they were very, very good, and they got everybody up and dancing, and it was just like awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun. And even just getting to, you know, get ready in my childhood home while we watched them outside setting up the tent, it was a very father of the bride
very
moment.
Much so.
To get to do that. And yes, the band was wonderful. Great Beach Catering did like a really great job, and Rose & Co. with the flowers. And honestly, I think at the end of the day, a lot of what makes a wedding is the people who attend. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to brag, but I am going to brag. Lucas and I have really great people.
Yes.
And so I think that's what made it so much fun, is that it was just a really great group of people together.
Agreed. And I think also there was so much joy about all of your guests there that were truly so very happy for both of you and your union too, that, you know, all weddings are celebrations, but this one seemed to have had a little bit more packed a punch of like just a joy, you know, And
yeah,
and
so, we were some of the last in both of our respective friend groups to get married. So I think everyone was also
they were
just
cheering
excited
you on, and they were excited, right? And yeah. Well, I hope you get to enjoy and bask in being a cover girl. I've always wanted you to be a cover girl, and I'm so glad that this photo is spectacular and it's different for a cover, and we all really love it here. Some people have even said here that they think it's one of their favorite covers.
And oh.
Yes. And it's just really heartwarming and beautiful. And I can't wait for you to hold it in your hand.
I know. I'm very excited to get to hold it in my hand.
Well, and you're coming to the beach soon in a week? 2 weeks?
Yes, in a few weeks. Yeah, I'll be here.
Well, thank you, Megan. Everyone go get Megan's book when it comes out, and we'll be pushing that out on our social feeds too when it's up on Amazon and in bookstores and
yeah.
Ready.
You can pre-order it now.
Okay,
and when you do,
okay.
You get the first three chapters in a special bonus.
Okay,
six,
good.
4-part podcast episodes.
Okay.
So a little mini podcast series, and you get the first three chapters if you just don't want to wait, but it will be out on September 10th.
I love it. Okay. Well, we will add that to this podcast too, so that people can do just that. And I look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you. And I love you.
Yes, I love you too. Okay. Thank you so much for having me. This was really, really fun. And I'm honored to get to be on the cover, because I know this magazine not only is just so special to people who get to experience it, but I just also know how much heart and soul you put into it. So thank you for including me.
Oh, thank you, Megan. Have a good day. See you soon. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this interview with beautiful Megan Ryan Asbury, and are enticed and interested to learn more about this young woman who is God-fearing, inspirational person that is just sunshine. Have a good day, everybody. Bye-bye.